Well, hi. I haven't seen you in a while. There was a movie. A lot of you probably seen it, Lord of the Rings movies, right? There's a scene in one of the movies that I thought was very, very interesting, where they come to this king, Theoden, who's sitting on his throne, and they're old friends of his, and he's been there for years, and you see him as you walk in that he's all, sickly, looks like he's kind of on his death type of a thing. And what it was, there was a guy sitting next to him, his name was Wormtongue, and what this guy was doing was just whispering in his ear constant, you know, twists and lies and innuendos and poisonous thoughts and things like that. And when they came, and you could see on the king's face visibly that all of this over time too has affected him. That all of these words, all this poison, all this stuff going in the ears, his ears, has actually made a difference to the king, and the king is, you know, in a really bad state. So what the friends were doing is they were coming in to say, like, we need to intervene into this entire thing. And so they came in and they pulled Wormtongue out and basically threw him out of the building because they had to get rid of that, you know, constant thing that's going into the king, and they actually kind of intervened and helped him get back to being what was more normal. Now, I thought it was a very interesting kind of a scene, because today what I would like to talk through and about is exactly that, is the tongue, and talking about the tongue. He was visibly poisoned by all of these words and things like that. And Gandalf, who's one of the good guys, comes in and says, keep your forked tongue behind your teeth, and kind of rebukes him, and then they end up throwing him out. But they had to pry him off. They had to get rid of this in this person who's constantly feeding these things. So today I want to talk about the tongue. And the tongue's important because I will quote this, Matthew 12:36. It says, but I say to you that every idle word men speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. We see that what words that we speak in this life are very, very important, because God says it will give account of what we do say. What we do say, you know, wherever it is, in private or wherever it is, that is going to be called into account someday. So it's very important to understand that every idle word that is spoken, you know, God will have you answer for that. And that's pretty serious if you think about it. So sometimes it feels like, oh, I'm just speaking, I'm just saying this or whatever. But this is a very important thing to understand, a very important thing to think about. Now today I want to go through, there's a chapter in James, a few verses. Let's turn over to James 3, because there's a few set of verses in James 3 that actually are very good to understand the tongue and its power. So power for both bad and good. Let's talk about both of those things, and let's talk about how we need to kind of think about the tongue here. James 3 is a very good chapter. So James 3, starting in verse 1. What I'll do is I'll read through this set of scriptures first, and then let's go back and kind of pick it apart and see what it's saying, because there's a lot of depth to what's being said here in James. So James chapter 3, starting in verse 1. It says, my brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn the whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell. When you first read that, especially if you look at 5 and 6 and you look at the language that's used there, it kind of just seems like, oh, hey, this is another great Bible poetic set of words that are just strung together. And you hear all these things about defiling and this and fire, course in nature and set on fire, you know, and you think, okay, that sounds very poetic. But it's actually very deep. Those two scriptures there say a whole lot about the tongue and what its impact is on us. And there's a lot of rich meaning there. So let's start to break that down. Let's pull this apart a little bit and dig a little bit deeper. First of all, the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. You know, any other metaphor could be used here, right? If you're talking, you know, in this case, forest fire, you could talk about an axe, right, and say, hey, it's the tongue is like an axe, and it's chopping down a tree, right? So you go to the base of a tree, and you're whittling away at it. You could say any other metaphor, but that's not what's used here. There's one that's deliberately used, which is a fire. A fire, right? A fire is the imagery there of a forest fire is consuming, spreading, and burning all things, right? An axe would destroy one tree at a time, but the tongue is not that. It's talked about as a fire that can destroy a whole forest. And I don't know if any of you have seen or the news where, you know, they have these big fires raging over on the other side, and where the firemen died, was it last year, 19 firemen. These things happen so fast. These things get so severe. These things are, you know, massively big. This is the picture that it's saying about the tongue. It didn't say one little thing. Hey, oh, you know, sticks and stones may break my bone. This says there's a forest fire that the tongue is seen as. You know, see how great a forest a little fire kindles. A whole world of wrongdoing and wickedness. This implies there's a multitude, you know, of forms that our speech can take. But it's the potential for harm, if you, you know, if you think about this. I don't know if you've ever seen a fire start in a house. Our neighbors, last year, their house burnt down. Their generator, because Woodinville power goes out all the time. And everybody has a generator in their garage. And apparently theirs somehow, like it was kind of half in the garage, half out, caught on fire. Next thing you know, their whole house went from zero to just burning. It just gutted the place. And I still hear every single morning, still, this is a year later, they're still rebuilding that place. So the devastating effects aren't just a, hey, oh, big fire, nice, beautiful bonfire. It's saying this, the effects, if you want to think about it, how it declares the tongue, it has the potential to do like a house fire. 2 seconds, threw something, burned it down, scarred forever. You have to rebuild something. And that is a cautionary thing to think about, because it's very easy to let the tongue, like it says, loose. But what its effects are can be devastating. It can be super devastating. And a lot of times we don't kind of see that. Now, I brought a, see if I can get this lit. I don't suppose anybody has a cigarette lighter. No, I'm just kidding. Wow. Come on. Oh, hey, there we go. I'm going to light this up here to look at this, because I think the illustration here is quite interesting. That is a tiny little flame. Tiny little flame. Can this burn down this building? Absolutely. Should I be doing this? Probably not. So kids, don't try this at home. But this is a candle and it's contained, you know, right here. But the purpose of this, you can feel the heat that's coming off of this, and it's a tiny little candle. And I think the idea here of having a fire or something like this is very, very instructive. Because right now, this size, I could put this out, couldn't I? Right? When it's on the building and it takes over the building, I can't put it out. I've seen our neighbors, there were 10 fire trucks in our, right next to our house, and they missed it all. They could not get it. They had all kinds of fire hoses and stuff, and it was done. It was gone. It was just a matter of 5-10 minutes, the whole thing was gone like that. And that's how quickly something happens. But the analogy is the fire here, is what it is. The tongue is like that. The tongue. And it's saying the evil tongue is like this. It can burn things up. Now, let's keep going on for some of the phrases here. It says, the tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body. This can have dual meaning. If you read that, a lot of times we'll say, hey, it defiles the body, as in us. But James here, if you look at the words behind it, is using it more in the Jewish sense of the words at the time of the day, which means the body means the person who's speaking the words. So when it says it's set among our members that it defiles the whole body, it's saying the person speaking the bad words is the one that gets defiled, is what the word verbiage is really mean there. The person doing the speaking becomes corrupt. They become something that gets more corrupted as they go. So it's not just talking about defiling the church, but it's a reference to the person who is doing the actual talking, right? So it's not just idle words. It's an indicator of things that are going on. You know, a lot of times people will say, I tell it like it is. That's just who I am, right? I just tell people all the time, and I just don't mince words, or I'm a straight shooter. But, you know, at the same time, those type of words are stinging and hurting and, you know, bringing other people down. And, it sounds like this. But what is happening is we have to start to look at When we talk about our words, we have to start to look at our heart inside of us. Because the tongue is tied to the heart. This is a very important one to understand. It's easy to just say, like, oh, I'm just this way, personality, I have red hair, or I'm this now, you know. There's all kinds of reasons we can say what's going on. But if our tongue is sting, hurting, tearing people down, and doesn't matter what reason you come up with, there's something more that we have to look at, and that is inside of us. Let's hold your place here and turn to Luke 6:45. Luke 6:45. Luke 6 and verse 45, Christ says this, and it's a very instructive statement about the tongue. It says, a good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure of his heart, brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. So it's not just a personality. It's not just a certain thing. What this is saying is that if you're having tongue problems, things are coming out, then there's heart work to do, is what this is saying. There's work to do in your heart. If you have tongue issues or issues of saying things, there's work that needs to happen in your heart, is what Christ is saying. Because what's in there is going to come out of there. Out of the abundance of what's in your heart, it's going to come out and be spoken at a certain point in time. So heart work, when I say that, and it could be a number of things. It could be just a matter of, you know, healing emotions. Bitterness can take over. You can get the wrong things done to you in life over and over and over. You can get yourself into a state where, you know, your heart is bitter. What's going to happen when you talk to people? You're going to sound bitter. It's going to come out certain ways, right? Anger, wrath, jealousies, there's a bunch of things that are behind it. But when we talk about the tongue, it cannot be just talked about in isolation. We have to talk about the heart. When we nurse these hurts, it becomes an excuse sometimes, doesn't it? They're real. They feel. They're everything. But then we kind of lash out, or it comes out on other people. And you know, it's a very real thing that somebody's going through. So I'm not trying to minimize that. But we have to do some heart work if we have tongue issues. If things are coming out, we need to take a look at our hearts. It could just be a severe trial. Sometimes you can get in a severe trial and down so low, everything seems negative, seems dark. Maybe people seem dark to you, and you say things about it. So this is what we have to start to look, not just at the words, but the heart behind it and what's going on there. So if you ever, when you get home tonight, do this. Don't do it right now because it will look quite funny. But stick your tongue out, right? And look in the mirror and see what it's attached to, right? If you look back there, what's that thing called? It's called your heart. So your tongue is actually, if you think about it, you won't see this, by the way. You can do that, though, when you get home. And but if you look at the back of your tongue, it's actually attached metaphorically to your heart, because those two things work hand in hand. Those two things. And what kind of heart work do we do? Right? It's not necessarily that we're hating each other sometimes. I think this is the part with Christianity, because we're not here in this room and we all hate each other and we're all just tearing each other apart. It's more about things like where we think we're right, or we're judgmental to somebody, like just quick to jump on something and think in our hearts. Or we think we're more righteous. I would never do that. Cannot believe this person's doing that. Whatever it is that's going in our hearts that we're thinking, that's how things come out. Because then you feel justified. Like, you know, I think I could help that person. I know exactly what's going on. And you start talking to somebody about it under the guise of Christianity. Or, I really want to do that person good. You know, and then, so all of these things that you think in your heart, if you're not evaluating where your heart is, you're going to have conversations about people. And the tongue and talking about people is the start of this right here. Right now it's right here at this size. That turns into a fire. And we as Christians sometimes can easily make it, whatever reason it is we come up with when we're talking about somebody, we can feel completely justified. And this is where we have problems, because it feels like we're right in doing it. And I'm here to say we're not right in talking about anybody at all. So the tongue is a fire. And it says, Proverbs 12:18 is a good one to write down. There's one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. You know, there's a couple ways to talk about and to people. And one way, it feels like you're being poked. Backhanded comments, somebody's talking about you, not feeling supported, you feel stabbed in the back. It feels like the piercings of a sword. That is talking about people, either directly to their face or behind their back or whatever. But the tongue of the wise promotes health. The tongue of a wise person should make you feel better, should make you feel strengthened. And not only does it promote health in another person, we're going to come back to this, it promotes health in the person saying it. So go back to James. The one who is doing the speaking is the one who becomes corrupt or bettered as well. So it's a two-way thing. So whose health? It's your health there. So when we get stuck in some of those things, and not trying to minimize them again, sometimes a way to do things is to change your words. This is not a pop psychology 101. This is a Bible principle that we'll find as we go through this. It's really real. That sometimes if you start to examine your heart and say, man, I am festering on bitterness and anger, and it just keeps coming out. And in those words, there's this big cycle. Sometimes if you realize this is your heart, and you change your words, and you deliberately don't, guess what happens? Health and healing, like that Proverbs just said, happens to you. Yes, to the people you're talking to, but that happens to you, is what this is saying. Health comes to you, and healing comes to you. I remember, years ago, for a number of reasons, I used to be very sharp with my tongue. I still love a great mental battle, and I know a lot of people don't come armed to a battle, but I used to love, just the banter and the debate. But I realized some of the words, a lot of the words that I said, went too far. They hurt too much. And for whatever reason, I felt a little defensive, a little kind of rolled over in life for a number of reasons. But you know what? That's not okay. So I've really had to pull way back. And yeah, I love to banter, but if it starts to hurt or it starts to make somebody feel something, then no, that is not worth in the slightest. But you can see what happens is this tongue is connected to that heart and what's going on there. And I had a lot of hurts and things going on in my life, and I had to just stop and think about them, let them go and start to heal it another way. Even if nobody understood it, it doesn't matter. And you have to make a choice to do that. So let's turn back to James 3. Let's keep going on this. To me, quick wit was a defensive mechanism for a lot of hurts for me. And I still love a good back and forth, but it's not going to be to the detriment of somebody. And I've had to really think about that a lot. I didn't say I do it perfectly, but I'm really trying and have really tried over the past few years to not do that. So let's go back to James 3. Sets on fire the course of nature is the next one. Right? So James 3, verse 6. So we find first it's like a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is set among the members that it defiles the whole body. And it says, and sets on fire the course of nature. What does that mean? That phrase is an expression, it's a figurative sense. That means the whole course of somebody's life. The course of nature, like the nature that you living and breathing, it sets on fire your course. Just think about the course of your life. So the fundamental direction is what it's saying here of where you go in life has to do with your speech. For you, it has to do with your speech. Like, think about these things yourself. We're not here to just, everybody just, saying stuff. But think about this. There's a very positiveness in this if you want to think about changing the direction of your life. But it's saying the fundamental direction of your life has to do with your speech. Does that sink in? It's quite interesting. And if you back up to verse 2, it's reiterated. It says, if we all stumble in many things, if anyone does not stumble, etc., he's also able to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths so they may obey us, and they turn the whole body. Look also at ships. They're large, driven by fierce winds. They're turned by a very small rudder. This is a point that's reiterated two or three times in this set of scriptures. It's saying the direction of a ship, where it goes, is set by the little rudder. The direction of a horse, by the bridle, the bit in the horse's mouth, and the direction that it gets turned. So the analogy is said two or three times here. The course, the direction your life goes, has everything to do with the words you use and the words you say. It's that powerful. So when we talk about a destructive force like fire, that's negative. When we talk about the course of your life, that can be positive, based just on the words that you use. So it's able to set the direction, steer your entire life. And that's what's said here in a few scriptures. I'll just quote Proverbs 18:21: death and life are in the power of the tongue. And those who love it will eat its fruit. Whose death? Whose life? Yes, other people, but it's saying your life. Your life. You living, and those who love it will eat its fruit. You reap it. If you change your words, you reap it. This may sound kind of simple, but it's actually very powerful when we think about the words. Now, can it really alter your life? Let me tell you or read a story from John C. Maxwell's book. He writes a lot of books. I like some of his stuff. This one is a book that was called Winning with People, and it's a story that takes place. Let me just read a few of these paragraphs to you. It says, after class one evening, a young woman named Lois, who had moved to Chicago from the small town in Wisconsin to take a new job, confided in Crane, Crane's a teacher, that she felt isolated and lonely. I don't know anybody except a few girls at the office, she lamented. At night, I go to my room and I write letters home. The only thing that keeps me living from day to day is the hope of receiving a letter from my friend in Wisconsin. I was largely in response to Lewis's problems that Crane came up with what he called the Compliment Club when he announced to his class the following week. It was to be the first of several practice assignments he would give them that term. You are to use your psychology every day, either at home or at work or on streetcars or buses. For the first month, your written assignment will be the Compliment Club. Every day, you are to pay an honest compliment to each of three different people. You can increase that number if you wish, but to qualify for a class grade, you must have complimented at least three people every day for 30 days. Then at the end of the 30-day experiment, I want you to write a theme or paper on your experiences. Include the changes you've noted in the people around you, as well as your own altered outlook on life. Some of Crane's students resisted the assignment. Some complained that they wouldn't know what to say. Others were afraid of being rejected, and a few thought it would be dishonest to compliment someone they didn't like. Suppose you meet somebody you dislike, one man asked. Would it be insincere to praise your enemy? He says, no, it's not insincerity when you compliment your enemy, Crane responded, for the compliment is an honest statement of praise for some objective trait or merit that deserves commendation. You will find that nobody is entirely devoid of merit or, you know, or virtue. Your praise may buoy them up, you know, etc. So Crane's students discovered that their sincere compliments had a positive impact on the people around them, and the experience made an even greater impact on the students themselves. Lewis blossomed into a real person who lit up a room when she walked in. And another student who was ready to quit her job as a legal secretary because of an especially difficult boss began complimenting him, even though at first she did so through clenched teeth, right? Eventually, not only did his surliness towards her change, but so did her exasperation with him. It went both ways. They wound up taking a genuine liking to each other and got married eventually. So that's not the point of this, but yes. George Crane's Compliment Club probably sounds a little corny to us today, right? But the principles behind it are just as sound now as they were back then. The bottom line is that Crane was teaching what I call the elevator principle. We can lift people up or take people down in our relationships. He was trying to teach his students to be proactive, you know, and he said that start the ball rolling by doing that. So it's quite interesting. This is just on a human level, talking about the same principle we're talking about, that when you talk to other people, it lifts them up, the other person. But what happened to every single one of these people is they got lifted up. They became different people. So when James says it sets the course of your life, it's so true. Not an accidental thing, not a nice psychology, pop 101 psychology kind of a thing. Now, is there an example in the Bible? Turn back to Numbers 13. Let's look at this example, because here's a bad example of the tongue going astray. Of a fire rampaging through a group. So, changing or having negative words can set the tone in the direction of your whole life. It can, just as well as positive things can. Numbers 13, starting in verse 26. So this is Israel. It says, Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. So they went in to spy the land and came back. And they told them, they said, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly is like was said. It flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit. And they showed them the fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the lands are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. So there's people after people after people. They're big, they're huge, they're ferocious. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses. And he said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we will well able to overcome it. This is not misplaced positive Pollyanna. This is, God said, I will give you the land. Caleb said, no, let's go take it, because we're well able to. God said we will. That is a speech in a language that's not fake, not false positive, but very much grounded in God, and he's focusing on that. But the men who had gone up with him said, we're not able to go up against the people, for they're stronger than us. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom saw it are men of great stature. In verse 33, there we saw the giants, etc. And we were like, you know, grasshoppers in their sight. So, go on to chapter 14. This started, right? A negative report started in the congregation. And what happened is all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died, kill us now. Or if we had died in the wilderness, why has the Lord brought us out of this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to go back? So they said to one another, let's select a leader and return to Egypt. You see what just happened there? A fire, a little fire got lit that was not the right thing. And what did it do? It engulfed and spread and burned up the entire congregation of Israel. The future of their course of their life in this moment changed. They could have gone in and taken the promised land. They did not. They did not. And what we see here is they refused to go in. They went back. All because of a flame that started out like this right here. Burned the whole house of Israel down. Just like that. Caleb tried to. There were two spies that gave a good report. The others didn't. And what happened is this fire took off and it got repeated. And you can see what happened at night. You can imagine this scenario, because it's talking about, they lifted up their voice and they all wept at night. They're all probably sitting around talking and how horrible it is and bad and crying and oh, and it just kept going. The tongue lit this fire. This tongue changed their life right there. I mean, it's a very clear example. So, they corrupted themselves. They set the direction of their life. Right? Now, our tongues are really important to say the right thing, especially with a child. You know, have you ever heard a parent at some point just, you know, oh, you're just not really smart enough to go to college, I think. You know, you're just, you know, something like that lodges into a person's head, and they think they're that way. You know, one of my brothers he got said that to him one time, and he thought for years and years and years, he would repeat it every once in a while, and you were like, he's like, no, I'm just not a smart one to go to college. And I was like, why not? That is not true. That is just not a true statement. But somebody put that in his head. And he dwelled on that for years and years and years. But what a difference the words make. When you raise your kids, I see this a lot of times with parents, it's hard not to just react to your kids. They're always getting in trouble. They're always doing something, right? No, they're mischievous. They're all over the place. But if all you do is react, you're just going to create a reactive relationship. You know, put some positive things in there. It's really nice. Have you ever seen a kid do this? Walk up and say, smile. Hey, you know what? I really love the way that you smile when you walk around. And watch what happens to their face. It lights up. And they're like, I like smiling. Right? You know, you get this reaction. That's a genuine statement. That's nothing that's falsely flattering somebody. But we don't say enough things like that. We react to what they're doing wrong. But you know what? Deliberately in your day, wake up and plant something constantly in your kid's head. Guess what will happen? I guarantee you won't have to get on them as much. Let's just say that. You can set the course of somebody's life big time with the words you use. You won't have to get on them as much. You won't have to react as much. After a while, they want to crave that, want to be that, want to be around you. They like that. So the words can make a difference when you raise your children very, very much. Again, I'm not just saying, oh, just walk around false positive. That's one of the things that irritates me the most in life. But being very real and very forward-looking and very in a positive way talking to people makes all the difference in the world. And it helps you in your direction in life too. So this is a bad example. This spread through ancient Israel. But what happens and how you say things in life will set the course of your life. Clear example right there where it actually took them off to where they had to wander more years. They could have gone in. just by the speech that burned up ancient Israel. All right, the last phrase in James is, set on fire by hell is the last sentence in, if we're looking at the progression of the tongue. Now, it's set on fire by hell means what it means. It's talking about where the source sometimes of this fire, this flame, comes from. It is a thought that comes from the spirit world or from Satan. This isn't saying you can blame Satan on this. It's saying you need to recognize sometimes these things that where your thoughts and your brain is going is not a good thing. This is what a being who wants to destroy things and start a fire would want you to say. So don't say it. Don't say it. This is just saying sometimes the source is that. Sometimes it comes from that. We always think we're just completely independent, but there's a spiritual world out there, and there's wavelengths, there's feelings, there's things that we can go through. And to get us to react and to say things that we shouldn't. Now, James 3, verse 9 says, talking about the tongue, with it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not to be. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter water from the same opening? It does not. Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or grapevine bear figs? It cannot. Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. So it's saying if you have things, and even if it's you're mostly trying to be positive, but even you have pieces, it's saying that's not how a pure spring water works. You either make the spring pure or not. But this is saying that sometimes the source of this comes from the spirit world and not in a good way. So this is something very important for us to understand. Matthew 5:37. I'll just quote that. You don't have to turn there. We'll stay in James for a second. But Matthew 5:37 says, let your yes be yes and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one. Talking about purity of speech. Let your yes be yes. You know what that says? I know I've said this a few times. That doesn't say that all you have to do is walk around and say the words yes or no. Right? You know, hi, how are you? Yes. You know, doing well? No. You know, this is not what it's saying. This is saying if you say the word yes, it should mean yes. Don't mix it with something. Don't be passive aggressive. Don't put some other motivation behind it. If you're going to say the word yes, it needs to mean yes. And if you say no, it should mean no. Because anything more than that is of the evil. And why does it say that? Because if you look at Satan, Satan is the one, he's the source of guile. He's the master of unclear and doublespeak, meant to deceive people, meant to tear them down. Right, what did he say in the Garden of Eden? Right? You know, has God said you can't eat of that? Oh, phew, wow. You're getting something held back from you. You know, this is the kind of speech that he says. It's not clear. God was saying something to them very clear for their good. And he was saying, no, you're not going to die. Watch. And he used doublespeak. Yeah, they didn't die physically, but that was the spiritual decision they're making to choose. Now, he also said this when talking to Christ. When he was tempting Christ, this is how he spoke. I mean, Christ fasted because he knows the power of the tongue. He would say things like, you know, if you're the Son of God. Like, the doublespeak is planting a thought, you know, oh, if you really are. I'm not saying you're not, but if, you know, there's this kind of a talk that goes with it. He's very much the master of the doublespeak, that it can sound good. Now, it's easy sometimes for us to do that in a different way. Not as, you know, in some ways, it's more of a, we start playing games with our words. We start, you know, double-minded, double-speak kind of things. It's very important for us to think about that as the purity of our language. We can say things, it's easy to say, oh, you know, I just really care about this person. And therefore, blah, you start talking about them. And it's not true. That's not true. Okay? That's something you want to do and talk about. And it's not you just caring about somebody. You know, whenever we have this kind of double speak or things inside or passiveness, but we say something else to somebody, that's not good. This is where it says, if you're going to say yes, make it yes. If you're going to say no, make it no. Anything else that goes and mixes is of the evil one. That's how he talks. That's what that scripture means. It's of the evil one that way. So double speak, double talking, things like that is very important for us to think about. You know, guile is a big thing. Guile is something where you're not pure. You have meant to deceive, or you're saying something, or you're, you know, you can come across flattering, but then you really want to tear somebody down. All these things, it's called guile. There was a law in the Old Testament that said, in Exodus, says, if a man comes presumptuously on his neighbor to slay him with guile. Like, they shall take him out of the altar that he may die. It was not a small thing. It's saying to slay somebody with guile means that you are going against your neighbor to talk them down. Not pure. And if you do that, then they're not guiltless. That is an importantly big thing that God talks about there. Now, you can write down Psalm 64. I won't read this for now, but Psalm 64, verse 1 through 4, talks about those who sharpen their tongue like swords, and they bend their bows, and they shoot at. And, you know, David was praying, please help me, please save me, because this is a big thing when this happens, the tongue happens. And they get bolder and bolder. Okay, so when's it okay to say something bad about another person? Let's turn back to Jude 9. Jude 9. There's a very clear example here that leaves us without excuse. Jude 9 is talking about, it says, starting in verse 9, it says, yet Michael, the archangel, in contending with the devil, when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared not bring against him a reviling accusation, but said, the Lord rebuke you. So the example that's set up for us, there's not really an ambiguity to this. Ambiguity. You have one of the archangels, and you have the Satan, the devil, who could be the worst of the worst. And Michael did not engage in the accusations against that being. Of all the people in the world to be accused would be the devil. Michael knows the power of the tongue and what accusations are, because that's what Satan does. That's how he talks. That's how he interacts. And he did not bring a reviling accusation against the one who deserves it. I don't think there's a clearer example than that. I don't think we have wiggle room to get out of anything, because that would be the ultimate example you could come up with. And he says he didn't do it, but he just says the Lord will take care of you. The Lord rebuke you. He was not going to engage in this kind of talk. That's powerful. Let's not engage in that kind of talk. Accusations, words, or things that are said about other people. That's a clear example. So when's it okay to say something bad about somebody? Never. Never. I'm not going to caveat that. Never. Let's just not. Okay? Have you ever met somebody who refuses to speak about other people? I find it refreshing. Because you start, you know, you hear the crowd go a certain way, and it's just like, they won't engage. And you're like, oh, it makes you stop and think. It just stops that conversation right then and there. And I find that a beautiful thing. So, let's pull James back together here, because James has a progression with the tongue that he's talking about in those scriptures. The first phrase, just to summarize it, back at James 3, the first phrase points to the fire and the multitude of evils contained within, and prompted by impure speech. The second warns that the whole person yourself gets corrupted. The third adds that the corruption sets the course of a person's life. And the fourth exposes the source of where some of this fire comes from, the spirit world. So let me read that verse in the NIV version, because it translates it very well to understand the intent. James 3, verse 6 in NIV says, the tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. So if you get the intent, there's a lot of meaning into that. It's not just a poetic statement, you know, not just a nice poetic thing that sounds really good. It's a very deep thing. And if we want to change the course of our lives, the tongue is how we can do that. Turn the ship in the rudder. That doesn't mean you're automatically healed in the bitterness, and you might have to think about that, but you know what? Change your tongue. I find that this is hard for me to do sometimes, because, you know, life can just press you down. I can be so stressed, so maxed, so, and everything feels a bit heavy. And it's hard not to, but, you know, sometimes I'll stop and just try to be thankful. And I have to force it, because you're so in a place where you just feel pressed down. But when you stop and do that, all of a sudden it's like you can kind of lift yourself up differently. It's a different thing that happens to you. And then once you start thinking like, wow, man, I've been just focusing over here. And if I focus over here, that is a world of difference for me in my life, where it goes. So something to think about. When we want to set the course of our life, our tongue is what we can do. What does God's tongue do? Turn to Isaiah 55. God's tongue. just use a couple more scriptures here. Isaiah 55. This is speaking about God speaking. What does it say about his words? Isaiah 55 verse 11 says, "So shall my word be that goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish what I please, and it shall prosper in the thing which I sent. For you shall go out with joy and be led out with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth into singing before you, and all the trees in the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the cypress tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off." God himself, in his very own words, as it says there, are very deliberate. His words go out of his mouth with purpose, with intent. It's not idly spoken. It's not returning to him void and just didn't happen. Like, anybody listening? God says, "I declare joy and happiness and leaping and healing and these things. And when my word goes out, it shall prosper in these things I say." Our Father and our God is one who speaks like that. That is what his word does to us and the power of it when he speaks with us. And it's to heal. It's to get rid of those thorns and those things. And it's to grow all those things. So God's word produces great growth. It produces joy. It produces all of these things. He just has to speak it. Do our words come close to doing that? Do our words come close to doing that? Colossians 4:6 says, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one." That's a great one. May your speech always be with grace. You know grace? Gracious to somebody? Seeing the good, giving them a break, saying something positive, you know, trying to, if they make a mistake, don't call it out. You're not going head to head. It's being graceful to people. Not only that, it says seasoned with salt. Seasoned with salt. Why do you put salt on your food? Some of the commentaries say seasoned with salt, you know, it's a preservative agent. It's true, but that's not what that says. It says seasoned with salt. Like if you want some food and you want to bring out some of the taste, you season with salt. It's saying not only be gracious, but season your words with salt. Make it taste better to them. Put a smile, right? Laugh. You know, give them something or, you know, put a hug around it. Whatever it is, you want to season it with salt so it's like, wow, I love that meal. Thank you for feeding me that, right? This is what it means. It's quite an interesting, you know, picture the way it says it. And there's a lot of other scriptures that I won't read. But it says, "He whose speech is gracious, the king is his friend." People who speak gracious, people who talk like that and interact with other people are well known and even in the highest ranks. But if you stay on the bitter side of it, and that's where things are, and everything only comes out that way, then it doesn't do the same thing. So it's quite interesting. Have gracious speech and seasoned with salt. Let me just read. I won't turn to these, but if we think about a tongue that heals versus pierces, Proverbs 12:18, I read this before, "There's one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health." Proverbs 12:25, that was in the announcement. "Anxiety in the heart of a man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad." Proverbs 15:4, "A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit." Are you a tree of life to people, or are you breaking people's spirits with how you talk? Proverbs 15:23, "A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is." Right word spoken to somebody at the right time, how good is that? So satisfying. So, to conclude this, what do we do with this? Because I think part of the problem sometimes is our friendships here can get ruined by the poison of speech. If you have friendships in this congregation that are affected in the past year, they feel strained. You know, they feel like you're not on the same footing all of a sudden. I can guarantee you somebody has been talking somewhere in there. How else? Okay, yeah, people can rub people the wrong way, but that's not what goes on. People talk. They say this happened. Let's talk about the person. Next thing you know, we are saying, we're sitting there with our fingers in this flame, getting burnt, but not pulling your finger out. The words keep getting said. The words keep getting said. So when we want to heal friendships, we need to stop talking, first of all, about people, period, at all. And then we need to have words that are very clear, not double speak, and be positive to people, and you will see a difference. I can guarantee you, if your relationships are strained, somebody has said something. Just think about that. Some fire was started. It burned up a small area of it, but it's still there. Like my neighbor's house that's taking a year to get back together, and they're banging on nails and hammers every single morning, there's devastation. And that stuff can, that damage is hard to kind of fix back. So what do we do? Let's be very clear. Is there ever a time to talk about somebody? How about we just draw a line in the sand and say, never. Just don't do it. Just don't. How different would things be? You know how different they would be? You see this that can start? Imagine you're in a room and people start talking about somebody, or it kind of comes up, or, oh, I just really care about the, and next thing you know, there's a little crowd talking about somebody else. You know what you do? You extinguish that flame. Just say, you know what, let's just not talk about it. But, you know, just like, let's just not talk about it. Not going to, you know, be mean, but let's not. Just stop it. You know what you do? You put that flame right out, just like that. Put a flame out. Don't let that get bigger. How different would things be if that's all we did was extinguish every little flame every time it came up? So, should we talk bad about people? Let's just never do that. And let's have tongues that promote health and healing for all of those around us. Let's do that. Let's be that.